Hey there, friends. If you are a listener of our show, hopefully you are on the side of freedom and happiness for all sentient beings. The question for today revolves around this concept, this archetype of the warrior. What is it to be a noble warrior in our times and on the side of goodness, truth, and beauty? That's what we're going to talk about today. We're, in the first part of our show, going to be talking about this general concept of the warrior, somebody who is trying to come at life from a spiritual perspective, wants peace and blessings for all humanity and all the critters of the earth. But what do you do when all of that is threatened? What do you do when you yourself need to really, you know, gird yourself up and take on those forces that might be antagonistic towards you, might be out to get you? What is it to be a warrior? What is it to be a just warrior? Is it even possible? Is it even compatible with a spiritual life of love? That's what we're going to talk about today. We're so glad you're with us. Get that orange helmet on, metaphorically, or if you got one, hey, listen to the show with an orange helmet. That will be real fun for your neighbors and family and friends. Let's go.
Right run. Three, zero degrees.
All ahead full.
Steady as it goes.
Aye, aye, sir.
All ahead full.
All right, Stacey, we every once in a while, when we get slowed down a little bit on the show, it's because the topic that we had set out for ourselves is maybe frightening or takes a little bit of energy. I know that this has happened to you as you've been going through the Tao Te Ching reflections.
Oh, yeah.
If there's a specific one that you're still working on.
Yeah.
But all right.
I would also say that, I mean, one of the things that for me I'm finding is we've been really, really busy.
Yeah.
We had the end of your school year, which your school goes into July.
Mid-July.
Which
not a fan of that.
Almost every other school's out.
Yes.
And then every time you're like, you mentioned that you're a teacher, and they're like, and you still have school?
Yeah.
So that was a taxing part of the year, although rewarding, but very taxing, because it was, you weren't doing
grades,
the regular
projects. Yeah. We were traveling around town doing psychogeography. Good stuff.
And then you got
middle schoolers exhausting, middle schoolers on public transport around town for 2 weeks.
And then on top of that, you've picked up extra jobs for extra money.
It's been fun. I've been working soft security at sporting events, which is cool. I get to be on the field sometimes there at the soccer matches. And then also doing some events like flamenco and the candlelight. And that's been really kind of fun. Got to run into the governor and other fun VIPs in this little side thing that I do in the evening. But that takes away, I think, is where you're going.
Well, the time that we have in general, we've been scrambling around just trying, trying to do life, pay bills, all that stuff, right? Which also reminds me of, you know, I think that one thing is the consideration that there is a warrior in all of us, right? Kind of more like on the side of an archetype.
Yeah.
Right. And how that warrior comes to be, it has a lot to do with even how much I think self-work that you've done. There's a lot of ego in fights often. Right.
Yeah.
But the other thing too is busy, busy, busy life can wear you down to where I think there's a portion of the warrior of even showing up to your own life, where you're present, where you are aware of what's going on, and that you're not just so beaten down by life that you just don't have the strength to pay attention even to what is going on around us. I must say that for me, I've been like kind of put a little hiatus on following the news. It became too much. But also there's a piece of that that's not wise, because
we're going to look at the news.
There's
a lot of
stuff going on in this world right now. And to like, for me to just kind of have an attitude of, oh, well, if I don't see it, I don't hear it, it's not happening. Well, that's not true. It's happening.
Right.
I'm less attentive to it right now. And I guess I do have the peace of mind that I know you are very attuned to what is going on.
Let old Jeff take care of paying attention to the zombie apocalypse around us.
And that I can, you know, take a little break from it. But that's not wise for me either. I need to know myself. Because when it does come time to fight, I need to understand what is going on and not just be reactive, right? It's like you can see these things like brewing.
Yeah.
And if, like as you have, if you've been watching it for a long time, then you know, okay, now's the time where, you know, something has to be done.
Yeah. This is a really good point. There is a way in which we can cultivate a spirituality that causes us to not be interested in addictively watching cable news. Mm-hmm. I get that. And I think there's a value in that. You know, the kids have always said, hey, slow it down, Dad. Don't be too stuck to that. At the same time, that can cover over, or it can give us an easy out away from being a warrior when it's time to be a warrior. Mm-hmm. I think about the Bhagavad Gita, the famous situation where Arjuna is reluctant to fight in this epic battle, which is always surprising because you think, isn't it this ahimsa from the East, this Hindu idea of nonviolence? Why is it talking about violence? And for many people, when they interpret at least a certain strand of American Hinduism, when they interpret the Bhagavad Gita, they do so in a more of a metaphorical way. But sometimes Arjuna, you know, says, Krishna, you got to get out there and play your part. You've got to, you know, follow out your dharma, you know. And I think that's true. And it's, I suppose, okay, if you're not ready, then you're not ready.
Yeah.
But sometimes we need to get ready.
Well, you know, the other thing I would say, too, is kind of being careful to, you know, even sort of pay attention to where are you getting your news sources, yeah, and what are, you know, what sort of biases do they have, right? If you're traveling at all this summer, you know, if you've had a chance to travel or are going to travel, maybe it's too late, maybe you already did your travel, but I highly encourage you to, wherever you are, if you're outside of your little area, look at local news. It's interesting when you are in a hotel room somewhere in a different part of the country.
Yeah, how are people seeing the world?
And then what does the news look like there, the local news? The other thing is if in another country, it's even more powerful. How are they talking about the U.S.?
Yeah.
You know, and any of the world stuff that's going on. What is their take and perspective? How are, you know, and I think it's really, really eye-opening.
Oh, yeah.
When you start to kind of recognize what part of the country you're in, what is that, you know, what is it saying, or other countries and their opinion of us?
Yeah. So, we're talking about the general concept first, and before we move on from it, that idea that we get worn down is part of the problem of Babylon. Mm-hmm. Keep the average person so busy,
yeah,
in the factory until they can grab a couple cocktails on the way home, fall asleep drunk, come back and do it again with some coffee. You have less chance of revolution when people aren't able to kind of mill about in a plaza,
yeah,
or a public square or a meeting hall. You know, those opportunities for community, real community, real discussion, the more the system, money, power, and glory, the more that unholy triad is allowing us very little time to foment political rebellion, you know, the more we're stuck with booze and sports. Mm-hmm. And sports are fine enough, but like, you know, that bread and circuses attitude of the empire.
Well, yeah, and we're even, you know, we just had our daughter graduate from college, and mm-hmm, and now all the loans are going to be coming due, right?
Yeah,
and
it's got to keep going.
There's a lot of times where a lot of debt can come into an education, and then you've got to get out there in the workforce, and then you've got to, you know, keep paying that off.
Don't have time to go on strike if you got to pay that.
Right.
You know,
so it is interesting how much we can get so busy that, yeah, it's too hard to do anything else.
And we understand, friends, if you're just tired or if you're in an emotional space where you're not ready to be a warrior, that's a place, and it's worth recognizing that. But there's also this opportunity and this challenge that we're really talking to ourselves here mm-hmm. about, and that is, at least for us, we feel that we now have an opportunity or a time in which we need to get our boots on metaphorically and get out into the world and be involved in more activism, more advocacy, and to at least strategize where are those places that we should start putting most of our effort. Because I think the general perspective here, regardless of all the little details in terms of current events, these are times in which there are people that are really, really happy to go into battle because they've been stirred up and they're angry.
Yes.
And I'm thinking about people in the fascist and fascist adjacent world, the white nationalist world, the angry identity politics on the right, the anti-woke movements, all of that. People are getting stirred up and they're loving the anger. And so if you're a person of peace and you say, oh, I don't want to be involved in that, okay, but you can't just put the covers over your face and have the monsters go away, unfortunately. Especially if you're in a position of some kind of authority, some kind of responsibility, power, privilege. If you've got a position from which you can be helpful to the cause of righteousness in this world, mm-hmm. and I'll use that as just the world of justice and concern for people who are vulnerable, specifically those who are easily targets of scapegoating in times like these.
I would say that any time that you are showing up to any battle, if you will, it could be even, you know, a battle with a family member or whatever, but if you're caught up in the anger of it, that's where you can be reckless and you lose your focus, right? And maybe get into things that don't necessarily, or it's not going to be productive, but don't necessarily, like, it's not maybe a battle you should even be a part of, or at least not in that way. I would say that there's something about being able to stand up and know that you're fighting for something because it's the right thing to do. But I would say, at least for me, that if I try to separate out myself from the emotions of it, I'm probably going to make more rational decisions.
Right.
And be able to sort of more strategically fight the battle rather than, you know, sometimes you can confuse anger for passion.
Good point.
And they're different. And if you're fueled by passion, then, like, because you have to fight, right, or whatever, if you're fueled by that, then that's good. Like, you should be involved in this battle. But if you're fueled by anger, you need to probably first take a step back.
Right, because that can cloud you.
And gain a different perspective before you engage in the fight.
Right, and that's part of it, because especially the ne'er-do-wells in our culture right now are really, really good at trolling. They're really good at getting people fired up using, you know, kind of bombastic and meme-y, I'm talking about memes, to stir things up and get you to be so deranged in your, either
it's a tactic.
It's a very important tactic that they use. I was sitting in contemplation, just to kind of give us maybe a thesis for what we're trying to say about the warrior. I was sitting in contemplative meditation and partly thinking about this idea of the warrior. And then after I came out of that, I just wrote down some notes that I think are at least where I'm coming from. One, it's time to maybe be a warrior. I'm putting in the maybe. It's time to be a warrior. The second point is to prepare for battle. That is, get your mind clear about the issues, do some research, understand what's going on, get into a good position to engage. And now what I'm talking about battle here, we're going to be talking from the perspective of nonviolence. We're not ruling out any violence out of hand right now, but for our purposes, I'm not talking about violent battle.
Well, and
I'm talking about culture wars.
Right.
Somehow, because we were saying, oh, well, we don't want to get involved in the culture wars. Yeah, but sometimes there's a cultural metaphorical war going on, and maybe it's time to get involved in that for mm-hmm. a lot more of the good people of the world who don't, they're not predisposed to do it. They're not belligerent, but there are people that are threatened right now.
Yeah.
The next point was that I wrote down is to stay sober for battle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's very easy for us to inebriate ourselves. There's a time when you're just down and fine. You have a couple glasses of wine, take your burdens down a notch and watch a TV or something. But to always be in a state of inebriation and not be clear-headed,
and
I think is a problem.
And that's also, like, part of that is the escapism and,
right.
and our culture.
That's what I mean by sober, too, yeah.
Yeah, our culture very much is like, okay, you know, you work Monday through Friday, you have your weekends, and your weekends is where, what, you go to the movies, maybe
right.
go see Barbie. or you know, go out drinking or whatever, you know, like watching your, you know, maybe like streaming your favorite right. series and binging on it or something, right? It's like all these like
checking
things
out
that
though.
Are, it's fun to do that every once in a while, but if it is, if you're primarily using that time just to check out, rather than even like thinking about like, what do you actually like want to do, what would you enjoy doing in life, right? So rather than pulling back, like what is it that to actually engage in something that you find meaningful?
And when you're sober, you're not just getting fired up about things that don't matter.
Yeah.
You know, well, you always know that drunk guy that's...
yeah, well, and I was going to... One of the things I was thinking is that when things are, like, become violent, I do think that that a lot of times is anger.
Yeah.
If you're initiating it, right?
Yeah. So the other things I wrote down, the foundlings are what really matter right now. And for us, the foundlings... Are what we dedicated the rendition of the Tao Te Ching to, but it's really been the centerpiece of what we do on this podcast, and that is concern for the foundlings, those who have been essentially disowned by society. It could be the young people that are seeking their own spiritual path. It could be specifically BIPOC people, queer people in our day who are being targeted by political type people around the country right now, but also around the world, and it is increasingly dangerous for people with various identities that are not really they're not a threat to society, but they're easy scapegoats because they are not fitting a certain normativity that we receive through what Antonio Gramsci called cultural hegemony. Cultural hegemony, again, is this idea that not only does a power system or a domination system force you to be a certain way through the police and through force, but by putting certain assumptions into the world about family, life, economics, everything into television and books and so forth, we absorb these values and then we police ourselves. We don't realize that we're acting against our own interest because we've absorbed the values of the domination system through culture. And it could be as simple as watching a television show and assuming that if you're successful, it's an economic success mm-hmm. or whatever, right? Then the other thing I noted was that that the foundlings are, for us, this relates to chosen family, but also the importance of all people of goodwill that are older, you know, adults, to, even if you don't have biological kids, to go out and be mentors to younger leaders, to kids who are in need of some support. This is going to be really important because there's a lot of people who in these times have increasing pressure, or there's increasing pressure on families to disown their non-white, non-heterosexual, non-cisgendered family members. And so for me, like when I think about the early church, the communities that followed the way of Jesus, one of the most important things was to support the poor, because the poor were poor very often, sometimes they started poor, but often they would be poor because they opted out of the system. They left the system that could have supported them, but they would have to, quote, hate their parents. Like, you know, Jesus says, hate your parents, hate your father and mother if you want to follow me, meaning not that you should physically, emotionally hate them, but you should be able to say, I'm going to walk away from this if this is not the way.
Yeah, and to your point about the foundlings, I think that if you really look at how our society is structured, we do very much have a hierarchical perspective on it, right? That's right. The way our world operates. And in order to have something on the top, there's got to be something on the bottom. And I think everybody sort of knows that they don't want to be on the bottom. And so as long as a group is being targeted that is kind of on the bottom there,
right,
that doesn't affect you, then it's like, oh, we're safe, right? Because we're not being targeted here, right? Mm-hmm. And the focus is now on somebody else or one other, a different group. And so sometimes that makes us less likely to engage in the cultural battle or whatever's happening, because it's not something, it's not like I'm having to fight for my own rights.
Right.
But eventually at some point, there's going to be some way in which if you have a society that's going to go after the rights of other people,
right,
that your rights will be affected in one way or another, or, you know, it's just a matter of time.
If
you're not careful. And I would say that it's interesting because we do talk about the vulnerable people in our society. Well, why are certain people vulnerable? They're vulnerable because their rights are threatened, and they're seen as an easier group to be able to take away their rights. And so I think it's an important thing that as long as we do have vulnerable communities, then we're not respecting the rights of all people.
And very often, as you'll see this unsettling rise of, say, Latino right-wing politics or gay and lesbian people who are anti-trans, it's uncomfortably obvious that there's this way in which, all right, I'm going to deflect cultural attention from me, and I'm going to place it on this other group. But ultimately, that's only going to be a short-lived victory. We've seen this before.
Well, and then, you know, and why is it at this time that why is the trans community so right now being targeted? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a fairly, I mean, they've always been like kind of in it's been a difficult thing for them in society.
Yeah.
But they're getting more and more targeted right now than they have been in the past.
Yeah, well, when we, on the Virtue in the Wasteland podcast, had entered into this topic, I had thought that one of the ways to really shift the conversation in conservative Christianity was to start with the trans side of things, to start with trans identities, because for me, I thought it was an angle in to a conversation that allowed people to see things from the perspective of perhaps more of a biological factor. When the fetus is flooded with certain hormones, this is going to affect people's brains. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, was helpful in a way. Certainly the intersex question helps, I think, people to see that this is not as simple as what we grew up with when we were kids. There are just a bunch of people who are choosing to be gay and lesbian because they don't want to be righteous, right? Like so to me, the transgender angle was helpful. It's gone the other way. I mean, even within it was 10 years ago that we had started that conversation, I thought that'd be an easier one. It has shifted now where there's surprisingly, even like say with the Proud Boys are, you know, it's cool if you're gay, you just have to not be beta or something like this. You know, there's this manliness kind of thing. And in any case,
feel like you know, with COVID came around, and then around that time was when we had all the protests for racial justice, and then since that time, it feels like society has kind of switched over to targeting, instead of maybe Black Americans, they still get targeted. I'm not dismissing
this
as an issue.
This is definitely happening in Florida, but as a political thing to mobilize.
But I think that the targeted group, politically right now is the trans community, and there's a shift in how
it's an interesting tactic, because there is a way in which it's possible to get to draw from a certain kind of macho aesthetic and ethos within otherwise marginalized communities in America. People who should bind together politically in America to support each other, right? Mm-hmm. The dividing of these groups through this issue is nefarious, but, you know, I don't say good move. It's a smart move if you want to destroy
and
shatter.
Because it is true that there is safety in numbers.
Yeah.
And so the smaller that you can break down a group and attack that group, it's an easier target.
So we'll get to the specific issues eventually, but like basically the deal is, I don't think, friends, if you care about yourself and the well-being of future generations, it doesn't matter if you happen to be emotionally aligned with this or that targeted group. We need to be on the side of all targeted groups.
We need to be
on the
side.
You just have to.
Yeah.
To for the sake of well-being of all society. Like, you don't have to love sword swallowers.
No, right.
And maybe, I don't know, is that a dangerous profession? But I mean, like, you may just not vibe with that scene, right? But whether it's like nomadic people, and I'm talking about like kind of people who aren't like, you know, settled into the norms of what suburban society is saying, or whatever, or interesting artists in lofts or whatever, like that. That mutual support of all human beings is the only way we're going to be able to even have a chance against the threats that I think are facing decent society today.
When you have, say, a church, for instance, that calls themselves Grace, and then they don't have grace, I find it interesting that our country, we say, is founded on freedom.
Yeah.
And we say liberty and justice for all.
For all.
But all we're doing is fighting about whose rights matter.
Right.
And not that everybody gets rights, right? Like, they say that they're protecting their own rights through legislation or whatever, but that's to squash somebody else's rights. And it's just interesting that our country has been plagued with this.
Yeah.
I think for probably all of its existence.
My right to discriminate against LGBT people is presented under the banner, I'm not saying my personal right, but under the banner of religious liberty.
Right.
Right, yeah. This is doublespeak from George Orwell's 1984. And by the way, friends, yes, George Orwell was not a fan of Stalinism, but he was a socialist. So it is interesting that there's a way in which recently people have co-opted this concept from 1984, people on the right have, to talk about political correct speech. And I don't think that's the main point. The main point is the kind of gaslighting of society when you're being told these things.
Right.
Let me finish my little list, and then I want to hear what you think about the archetype in general. Next is study your enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to understand what do they really want?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so don't get into fighting a battle that is an unnecessary red herring kind of thing. Just say like, well, what are they trying to do here? And sometimes you should act and sometimes you can just let things be. So, you know, there may be some trolls that you just ignore, but there are times when you need to understand what are they after? And if they're after something that's dangerous, you want to intervene. I think the last one is reassess the power of shame. This is something I've been thinking about. Somebody had commented on a thing we did a long time ago, one of the early shows about shame. And I still stand by it, what we had said. Do you remember, Stacey, about shame, the difference between shame and guilt?
And guilt. Well, we were saying that basically with guilt, it's like you either you did something wrong or you didn't, right?
Right.
And if you're guilty,
it's kind of facts.
Facts, right? But shame is a tool of manipulation.
Right.
And so if somebody is trying to shame you, they're manipulating you.
Yeah.
So I think what you're saying is by reevaluating what we think of shame, shame is kind of a tactic that can help control your enemy, really.
Yeah. And it's a helpful one. So for instance, what are your alternatives, right? Physical violence. So somebody comes in, let's say you're living in you're at a campsite. We've done, you know, a lot of like BLM. This is not Black Lives Matter now in this case.
Bureau of
Land Management. So we'd be camping there, and there might be a group of people free camping in an area, and there aren't police there, and you don't want to be coming to blows. You don't want campers like staging little battles. But if somebody is too loud, instead of finding them or going to a camp host to tell them to turn off the generator, shame of the community going, hey, don't be that guy. What are you doing?
Right.
That's an important nonviolent tool. And this, we talk about, oh, we're living in a world of cancel culture. I am glad that we live in a world where if the police won't do something about actual rapists, for instance, in, let's say in Hollywood, although, you know, fortunately Weinstein, you know, got some kind of comeuppance, like legally, but, when you can't go to the authorities to police themselves, you can also say, you know, for shame, Supreme Court Justice who's taking bribes.
Right.
For shame. If the Supreme Court Justice Alito, I'm jumping ahead to some current events, says, hey, nobody can police us, the Congress can't police us. Well, I still think the Congress, that makes sense for the Congress to police SCOTUS given the Constitution. But so we can still say, what are you doing? Because, yes, shame is a tool of manipulation or it's a tool. But if somebody's doing something shameful, yeah, right? If somebody's being cruel or let's say somebody's being, you know, homophobic or sexist, well, we can live in a free, quote unquote, free society where you're allowed to have your ugly positions, but we're also, as a society, free to shun you.
Right.
And
right.
I think that's like a great, that's kind of like what the radical Christians did. They said, well, let's not burn people at the stake. Let's not compel people to believe in something. But if you don't believe in our way, you're not part of our community. So you just exclude them. So that was the ban. And well, sometimes that got overplayed in the radical Christians of the Anabaptist movement.
Well, I would say, so adjacent to that is the idea of boycotts, right?
Right.
Because, that obviously is to have an economic impact on them as well.
Yeah.
But it's that, no, we're not going to support you. You're not our system, which we seem to be, we run things off of money. And if you affect the pocket of somebody by not watching their movies,
right,
not buying their products, right, all that kind of stuff, it's a nonviolent way of saying, no, we don't stand for this. We're not going to support you.
And in addition, there's also a cultural play going on, because if what you're wearing, say, is symbolic of your values,
yeah,
people will shame you if you're wearing a mink coat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so whatever you think about that, that's not really about necessarily killing the industry, although that's part of it. It's also saying, like, you proudly demonstrating your affiliation with practices we don't like now brings us to a place where we're going to say, ew.
Yeah, your values are a little off.
I don't want to hang out with somebody with those values. Yeah. And I think in many ways, anyway, I don't want to get into that more other than to say, I think that it is probably important for us to really think through, all of us, listeners, us, who are the people and when that we actually do have to disaffiliate with, right? Like, mm-hmm. This is a problem for like podcasters. One of the things that slowed us down in the last month, first of all, we took a month off. Thank you very much, friends, for being patient with us. We've got lots of good stuff coming now. We're recharged-ish. But part of it we'll get into on another show is I was in an interesting space, some creative spaces, a place where we were doing some open mic stuff, and there was a TERF, a trans-exclusionary radical feminist woman who was Jewish, lesbian, and really anti-trans, and it kind of bummed me out that this was going on in Portland, and that kind of deflated me, because I realized there are a lot of people that I started to think about putting onto the show, mm-hmm, and then I would research them more, and then I found some really nasty things that they were into, mm-hmm, you know, ideas, or people that they had platformed, and I didn't want to platform them without really thinking through like what it would mean to have them say on the show. Mm-hmm. And so like there are some things we started and stopped, you know, and we want to get right. There have been a couple other instances where people have kind of surprised us by kind of turning towards making a sharp right turn politically. And I don't know why it so emotionally taxes me, but it's kind of that, I don't know, for me, I guess it's that feeling of, I hoped that there were more allies for righteousness than it's seeming that there are. Or, and this is maybe part of our show, maybe there's a lot of good people out there that want to side with kindness and love, but those same people aren't disposed towards being vocal and loud and obnoxious, right?
Yeah,
so it's
true.
Hard to know where they are. It's but then you think about like John Brown, his probably major mistake when he took Harper's Ferry was assuming that more people were going to come to the party,
yeah,
and fight on behalf of slaves or slaves fighting on behalf of themselves. People are beat down. People are controlled. So even if you want to raise your voice, you know that there's a bunch of people around you, especially if you live in certain red states, that are going to slap you down.
Right. And
if you
hurt
say anything,
those you love, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever,
yeah.
attack you, right?
Yeah. So it's. Yeah.
I think the other thing that's interesting is I honestly think that our society at large, just in general in the world, I think right now we have a lack of good leaders. A leadership is
missing.
Oh,
yes.
You know, and
yeah.
I don't.
Oh, my goodness. Biden and Trump are the
presidential
candidates? What kind of fever dream is this?
Right. And so I think it's also hard.
It was stupid the first time. Part two?
Yeah.
Who made a sequel to that nonsense?
Yes. Yes. That is to be. I guess I never would have thought that would have come to pass is a possibility. And to me, it's scary that it is.
Yeah, it is very scary because here's the thing. I think the major gaslighting, the major trolling of our society right now is the fact that there are a decent number of people who are perfectly willing to take what is increasingly obvious criminal gangster in Trump, and they're okay to have this guy even be part of the conversation. And very often they're too afraid to do anything about it. Even people that are running against him, like DeSantis and Pence, you know, Pence who almost, you know, they were going to string him up.
Yeah. Well,
he still won't talk negatively about Trump, who's obviously been doing really naughty things. I mean, he already did naughty things. And now there are things that, you know,
the allegations of him being behind the insurrection,
all this stuff.
You have a potential
yeah.
presidential candidate
yeah.
that would have that like on their record. You know, like why don't we have real leaders? Why don't we have, you know, candidates that actually, you know, you would be excited to get behind?
But get to that question, why don't we have real leaders? That's part of the system. There is what we've talked about as Molech. There is this kind of evil in the world that is deeply tied to capitalism.
Yeah, I think money is...
And they're very happy to have... I don't know about the Trump part. You know, there's some rich people that aren't too happy about the Trump part. Or even the DeSantis thing. Money's been pulling back. But they're happy to have these weak leaders that aren't actually going to do something. I mean, think about Cornel West. Mm-hmm. Many on the left are... like him, but are very angry that he is running because they think it'll draw votes away from Biden. But the idea is you've got Cornel West saying things that, like, Cornel West is great. Love what he says.
Yeah,
lot of people that they wouldn't like him, but he's a very genuine fellow.
I really appreciated his book, Race Matters, you know, when we read that.
And so you read it, it's very sane. Well, why can't we have somebody like this? Well, because he's not electable. Well, that's an interesting question. You've got people that you know would be better at running the country than the sillies that we've got that we're looking at. But we all kind of know as a culture that there's a lot of people that would be better, but we can't elect them. Well, why not? What is sick about the system that you need to have a wealthy family or maybe self-made wealth or something, but you need wealth, you need connections. There's not an even playing field.
Right.
And campaign finance reform, it sounds like a boring phrase. I mean, as you know, as libertarian socialists, like, we're watching this from a different angle. Like, I'm not really ever expecting that the system can be cleansed. But it's important to know why. Because as long as you've got money and power and glory reinforcing its fake, you know, governors.
I do also think that there is a lot of
puppets.
Centralization of the money so that there's a few people now that have the greatest proportion of money.
Yeah.
And I think that that
they got richer after COVID.
Yeah. They continue to get richer and the poor get poor. And I know it sounds kind of trite to say that, but it's true. And if you look at, there's so many people right now that feel like their status quo is at threat to even try to fight against, because they're just trying to hold on to what they have.
Yeah. The middle class's power and money is getting vacuumed out.
Right.
And there aren't that many, you know, like you think when we were young and the conservatives were saying, well, if you work hard, you'll do well. Yeah. That might have worked in the 50s. But just working hard doesn't necessarily make you in any position to be saying you're doing well. But the fabulously wealthy are taking in mega profits.
Well, and even think of like there's so many companies that have different names, but they're owned by the same parent company.
Yeah.
And you just don't maybe realize it unless you're paying attention.
Here in Oregon, most of our food is grown like not by little farmers, but by these very massive corporations and the Mormons, by the way, because there was a little scandal here in Oregon related to the cattle industry. And when that was exposed, there was a fire sale on some ranches, as I understand it, and the LDS church bought it. Because, of course, the Mormons are preparing for the collapse of society. Yeah. They're preparing for Armageddon. So and they got the food.
They got the food.
Make yourself friendly with some Mormons in town, because their garages probably have all the food for when you need it. Don't take their food, friends. Don't be looting. All right, well.
But there are people, like you said, that are probably out there. They're decent people, but also just trying to survive. And so because of that, it is hard to figure out like how many people are actually on the side of truth, goodness, and virtue, right? It feels lonely.
Yeah.
It feels really lonely. Even hearing, you know, just in my day-to-day world, how many people are just looking out for themselves. Even, you know, I work at a wellness center and you know, massages were like booked out and, you know, basically we're booking for October right now and it happens to be July, right? Mm. At the end of July here. And we're now booking out for October for massages and people are like, they don't want to share appointments so that everybody can get a little bit of a massage and they want all that they can to exhaust all of their benefits, you know, and it, because that's mine.
We're in a scarcity mentality right now.
Yeah.
As a culture,
and there's, when we're in a scarcity mentality, it's everybody, me, 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 me. And I'm like, do you not see that somebody else is in pain and might need a massage? Like, do you not see, you know, like, and anyway, it's just stuff like that where can you at all look and care for somebody else other than yourself or your own family.
Yeah.
And it is discouraging sometimes how few people just can't, they just can't, they just don't see it.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know how we got there. I don't know if that's always been the case, but I don't know. Like, that's something I think about our culture.
Yeah.
Being more individualized,
especially,
being more individualized in general, it has that mindset of you're looking out for yourself and your own. And I think that that's one thing when we've lost that sense of community, which is also a threat to the status quo, is when you can get community together, get people, and you might call it organized, but get people.
Well, organized is the word, I mean, this is the radical nature of the politics to which we are now committed, and it's mutual aid, direct democracy. The spiritual anarchy is tied to this idea of, you know, for us, libertarian socialism. That means individuals are free. They should not be coerced. They should not be dominated, but the socialism part is we don't want to live in a world where old people get put in basements and children get, you know, put into a foster care system that's out of whack and like don't get lunches.
Or jail cells.
Yeah, or we're incarcerated, you know. So mutual aid, solidarity with one another. These are all really, really important features of what matters. Stacey, before we end this part of the show, this first part, would you maybe just kind of wrap up for us how this looks generally as an archetype in the kind of in more spiritual sense? I got a little political there, and maybe with the Tao Te Ching.
Yeah. So basically one of, on chapter 69, it talks not so much about the specifics of warrior, but military wisdom is right. kind of how it starts. But it's sort of, from the perspective of the Tao Te Ching, like Lao Tzu is, you know, saying, this is what it would look like when you engage in war. Here's some wisdom for that. And it says, classic military wisdom advises, when it comes to war, I don't plan the party, but I'll show up if invited.
Can I pause as we go through this? So when we were originally trying to find a way to express that, that's faithful to the original, but I don't want people to think, oh, right, so the person who's following the way, the Tao, is going to show up to every party where somebody's going to say, hey, let's have a war.
Mm-hmm.
No, you just because somebody's like doing that. The idea is, what you're getting at is, you're not going to try to stir up some kind of problem. Sorry. So what I think it's, you know, really what we're trying to get at here, what the text is trying to get at, is this idea that you're not going to pick fights. But when the time comes, when you need to be that warrior, you'll show up, and then the rest of the chapter is going to say, well, what's that going to look like?
Right, yeah, you're not looking for excuses to fight. You know how sometimes...
I have been there. I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
You can get, like, really upset, and it's like, oh, this, you know, I just wish this person would, you know, cut me off right now, because then I'll have at it, you know, or whatever. Like, whatever that is. Mm. Like, you almost, like, want somebody to do something wrong so that you're just in responding. And I think that's sort of planning the party.
Right.
Rather than, you know, then like saying, hey, you know, let's, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to do to de-escalate something and, you know, whatever, you know, you're not going to like, anyway, the point is we go look, sometimes it can be easy to go looking for fights if you're agitated and upset and angry.
Now think about Hitler and Neville Chamberlain here, I think is a way of thinking about it. Hitler starts the party in Poland, invades Poland, and Neville Chamberlain, the Prime Minister of England, says, hey, let's appease this guy. Let's just let him do, you know. So I think that's the thing that we're reinvigorating in our own lives, this idea that if somebody is going to go be attacking somebody, it could be Poland, it could be the trans community in your local town, it's time to stand up for our neighbors.
Yes.
And so... so to not show up sometimes. I mean, this is always a challenge because when there was the BLM marches, you know, like we let's go. But there are times when we're wondering, like in Huntington Beach, you know, where things were getting a little feisty. Are we doing the right thing by being a part of that? I think sometimes to not show up when there's actual fascists, actual neo-Nazis marching, to not counter-demonstrate sometimes, maybe very often, would be a problem. Now, maybe it's not a position that you want to put yourself or family into, but to always back off and do it like with the moral high ground of being a pacifist or something is not, or I don't want to stir up trouble is not what's going on.
Well, and I would, you know, here's another thing that just came to my mind is we mentioned again about... community, right? And how if we threaten community, then it's easier to control people because they can't gather, right?
Yeah.
And it made me think about, you know, the violence that is taking place when community gathers ever since like, well, I mean, it seems like it's spiked up since COVID, right?
Right.
That, you know, I have to think about whether I want to go to, you know, the Mississippi Street Fair.
Mm-hmm.
And be in a large group gathering because violence might ensue. And it did.
Mm.
And I mean, I was busy. I had other things going on. So it wasn't like a real choice. But then going forward, when that did happen, now it made me think like, do I want to be a part of any large group gatherings?
Right.
You know, there was a festival that was, you know, in the Oregon area that was also recently.
There was a shooting.
A shooting there. And I think that. For me, it almost has made me think like I can't let my fear of coming together as a community stop me from doing that because then now that right is also taken away.
Right.
but if you think about like what that's doing to discourage congregating.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's part of the whole game. So like often anti-fascist activity is about making it uncomfortable for Nazis to intimidate and march. When the KKK is doing its thing, you want to make the KKK uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You want to shame them. Mm-hmm. You want to show a presence that allows also other people who are maybe looking from the corners of, you know, their apartment complexes, they see the KKK marching through town. Is anybody standing up against this? Mm-hmm. That's really important. Continue with the chapter.
Yeah. I had never considered... Yeah, so the next part says, I'd never consider seizing an inch of your ground, only whether I'll concede a foot of my own. This is gaining ground without marching, raising a fist without throwing the first punch, engaging enemies without considering them enemies, arming yourself with something stronger than weapons.
So the first part, we intentionally put the fist in the air. Mm-hmm. So you're not throwing a punch, but you've got your fist in the air. So you can have a very strong, nonviolent resistance against some of this ungodliness, I would say, this wickedness, right? You fist in the air. You're going to be a presence.
I would also say that's the piece, too, that involves preparation.
Yeah.
And I kind of think of... even the warrior pose in yoga, mm-hmm. and it involves like balance and, you know, like you're basically, you're exercising, like you're a lot of these muscles and getting strength, right? Yeah. And finding balance and being in a position. You can look up, we'll put it even on the show notes or whatever, what the warrior one and two, but what those poses look like. Mm-hmm. But it is, there's a preparation that comes in there of being ready. Yeah. You know, you've got your fist in the air, like you said, right.
But we're here and we're not backing down.
You're not backing down. Yeah. But that also takes some preparation and, you know, readiness. Like it's work. Mm-hmm. if you're going to prepare to be a warrior, you have to, you know, there's a part of it that takes a lot of effort.
Go to the measurements there. Maybe we should have used kilometers. I won't, what was it about the inch and the foot?
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that's important for engaging online in life.
Yeah. I never consider seizing an inch of your ground, only whether I'll concede a foot of my own.
Yeah. So for me, I was thinking that this is important. Let's just say we're online. Your uncle says something. You don't have to get baited into everything that trolls will try to do to stir you up. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to own somebody. You don't need to always do that. But at some point, all right, after they've pressed in, you can be chill. But as you start to see people moving in on your boundaries, on the boundaries of others, all right, here's the foot.
Yeah.
Okay, now it's very clear that they're invading.
Yeah. Well, and think about this like quite literally when you're dealing with neighbors and fences.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And like, are you the type of neighbor that's gonna try to put your fence maybe just an inch into the other person's property?
Right.
And I think there's a certain time when you see a neighbor like pushing.
They kind of do it on purpose.
Pushing towards you. You're like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, no, this, I have to now stand up.
Establish
that this is, you're crossing the boundary line.
And there's an informal fallacy called the slippery slope, but there are slippery slopes. And one of the slippery slopes here is as you start to erode the rights of libraries to have books, teachers to teach the truth about American history or whatever, those little moves very easily can become very toxic for a society.
Yeah.
What you teach your children becomes very important. And by the way, as we're kind of wrapping up this part, in part two, we're going to talk about why, even though sometimes it feels like there are these kind of unnecessary cultural battles around education and schools, it actually matters because the way that you train, and not just train, but frame knowledge for young people is going to have a long-lasting effect on society. And the rights of all individuals within that society.
Yeah, and I think, so this next part of this same chapter, we're still in chapter 69, there's no worse catastrophe than disregarding your adversary. One time, I disregarded an adversary, and it nearly cost me those treasures I hold dear. All else being equal, when there's a fight, the side that laments having to fight wins in the end. And I think that the part about, first of all, no worse catastrophe than disregarding your adversary.
Yeah.
You know, you might, there's a part at which when you start to see, oh, one little right here that maybe got taken away, perhaps because, you know, there is like something out of control in society. So we're going to take away this right so that more people can be monitored. But also like look at like where that goes, you know, where, and if you disregard what's being done sometimes by people, or ways in which like things are like rights are getting taken away or whatever, it adds up, it adds up, it adds up to the point where at some point, like you, it's too late. If you're not paying attention, if you weren't really seeing what your enemy is after, what is their goal? What is their plan? What is their end game?
And the end game is, in this case, not pleasant. And they've stated it very clearly. I'm talking about the folks on the right, Christian nationalists, all sorts of things. They want things that even many so-called conservatives wouldn't want now. But that's the way it's going. And so, I think that's where we're at. If we don't take this seriously, it says here, if you underestimate the enemy, you can lose those treasures. Do you remember what the treasures were? It was like compassion, minimalism.
And non-domination.
Non-domination. So all of those things, these are the things we care about. Well, you don't get to have those things when the fascists are running things. Yeah. You don't get to... Like, I mean, you could have minimalism, I guess. But I mean, I guess, no, in the sense that when you think about, like, minimalism works when you can live in a society where you don't have to have a car to get to work 45 minutes away.
Right. Well, and minimalism isn't the same thing as scarcity.
Yeah. It's like a simple life, living in simplicity. And we're all in this, like, real hectic technological world. So, friends, these are... like kind of the thoughts we have as we're going into this question of, well, when and how should we engage the powers that be? That will be the topic of the next part.
But I would want to add really quick before we do end, though, that the other part here where it says all else being equal, when there's a fight, the side that laments having to fight wins in the end. And I think that is about that part of it is where is your headspace when you're going to battle?
Yeah.
And if you're going to battle because you are defending something that you are passionate about because you have to, because then that's coming from a different spot.
Yeah.
And it's not just this crazy violence or just, you know, hurting people for the sake of it or trying to take, you know, control or power. It's now you're dealing with somebody's like heartfelt inner eternal type.
Right.
Truth or what needs to happen. And when you're fighting against that, the way you fight looks different.
Let me give one example. If that you brought this up, I won't mention the names because it's still, there's litigation and stuff in process, but there's a friend of ours who, was targeted by a right-wing group. Our friend is a pastor, progressive pastor, and was targeted by some very frightening people, very intimidating people, and their dad showed up. Their dad, being a conservative dude, otherwise defending his gay son, who's a pastor, right, and putting his life on the line for his kid. That's kind of, I think, the illustration of where we're at. That even if you do not have the full political alignment with the people that you want to protect, this is a time to stand up and protect those who are vulnerable. This is an urgent call. And I think especially, dear listener, if you're the kind of person who's kind of reluctant, you don't really want to get into the culture wars, you don't want to be stirring up trouble, you're emotionally reluctant to it, that's exactly a sign that you're probably the person who needs to be an ally on this cause, for this cause. So how would we do it? What is it going to look like? What are the issues that matter?
And the other thing I would also say is, you know, what are the things that you're willing to fight for? At what things do you care about enough that if that was threatened, that you're willing to go to battle and be prepared ahead of time. So it's not a reactive thing. It's that, oh yeah, if this happens to my family or whatever, I have to stand up for that. If this happens in my neighborhood, I have to stand up to that.
And who's our neighbor? Like, who are we standing up for? And also recognizing that it can also have consequences.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean being the warrior doesn't mean you're going to win every time.
No. And that's, and that's the risk, but that's also, I mean, I guess that's, you know, why, you know, when we have talked about, like, when somebody has gone and fought on your behalf and has given their life for you, like, that's huge. But like, you eventually you get to a point where this world isn't worth living in if you're not allowed to exist, if you're not allowed to be. Like, you know, what's the point of creating more slave babies?
Yeah.
You know, and so you bring children in to this world just to be, you know, a slave? No, at a certain point, people are going to be like, no, I don't want to. I don't want to expose another individual to this sort of life.
Yeah.
So what are those things where that life is no longer like thought of as like, huh, that wouldn't be a pleasant existence.
We'll move into some specifics, friends, in the news on the next part of this two-part show. Until then, remember that if there is no justice upon justice,
there's no peace upon peace. Thank you so much, friends, for joining us for this episode of the Protect Your Noggin podcast. You want to join in on the conversation? We'd love to respond to your questions or comments on a future show. You can record a message by going to protectyournoggin.org and clicking on the blue voice message button. And don't worry about getting it perfect, since you'll have 5 minutes and a chance to preview your message before sending. You can also send an email if you're not comfortable with leaving a voice message. Please also follow us on Twitter at the PYNP. And rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you found this show of any help, why not share it with a friend? Until next time, peace upon peace, friends.
But he said there wasn't any leather. He said I was going out of my mind.
Not going out of your mind. You're slowly and systematically being driven out of your mind.
Why?
That's because you found this letter low too much.